Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy announced his retirement earlier this week, giving President Trump and Republicans a big opportunity and setting up a big confirmation battle. The vacancy gives Trump the chance to strengthen the court's conservative majority, potentially reshaping it for decades. Democrats are sounding the alarm, saying bedrock precedents like abortion rights are on the line. Here's Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer on the Senate floor this week.
This is the most important Supreme Court vacancy for this country in at least a generation. Nothing less than the fate of our health care system, reproductive rights for women, and countless other protections for middle-class Americans are at stake.
Charlie Jacobs is an associate professor of political science at St. Norbert College in De Pere. He's with us now to talk about the effort to replace Justice Anthony Kennedy. Charlie, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, do you think Senator Chuck Schumer was overstating things, or is this really that consequential an appointment?
It is consequential, but I think a little perspective is due. In essence, Democrats said about the same thing about Kennedy, because he was going to be a pivotal vote that was going to help sort of complete the Reagan Revolution and the transformation of the United States Supreme Court. And you have to remember that Kennedy himself was the one who upended conservatives' attempt to overturn Roe versus Wade and Roe versus Wade and eliminate abortion rights for women. And yet he and O'Connor and Souter worked with some of the liberals in order to sustain that precedent. So, you know, We can try to predict the way in which justices are going to vote, and we have lots of measures in political science and in other fields to try to understand that. But, you know, there's an old aphorism about where you stand is where you sit, and sometimes an individual who might wind up on the court might have views outside of that institution. But once they get in and they have to work collegially with eight other justices, the way they frame decisions and cases can change radically. So is it consequential? Yes. But I don't think right now we can say with any confidence that reproductive rights will end or the ACA will get overturned until we see who the individual is and how they're likely to work with the other justices on the bench.
And the goal, it seems, when a president of either party is picking a nominee, they probably want to lock down as best they can someone who's going to be as reliable as possible in the direction they hope. So how do they start, if we can use a Wisconsin phrase, sifting and winnowing from potential candidates?
Well, this is the kind of thing that happens in sort of the smoke-filled back rooms of the White House and has been going on even prior to the election of President Trump. I mean, staffers are working on these kinds of issues, and they have a good sense of who might be a good fit. Now, there are a number of dynamics that go into this. So right now for the Trump administration, it's what kind of political climate do we have? What's the public opinion on these kinds of issues in the context of the way in which Trump is governing at the moment, so that there are lots of things that they have to balance. And of course, looking right now at some of the controversies that have erupted and the reaction from U.S. senators, even Republicans, I think the Trump administration is going to have to be pretty careful about who they pick so they don't lose any Republicans. I think there are some safer choices where they can achieve their conservative goals, and some there might be a little bit more risky, especially when you think about some of the women senators on the Republican side of the aisle.
Let's talk about procedure a bit. If the president picks someone who all of the slim Republican majority can get behind, there aren't Democrats, or the minority party doesn't have the kind of options it used to, right, in blocking a Supreme Court nominee.
Correct. I mean, the use of the filibuster against the United States Supreme Court justice is off the table now. So, in essence, the Democrats can run a couple of maneuvers here and there to try and delay the process, but ultimately, if Mitch McConnell and the Republicans work the rules of the institution that are right in front of them, they should have a relatively clear path, as long as they have the votes, to secure the nomination that is forwarded by President Trump.
Talking to Charlie Jacobs from St. Norbert College about who's going to replace Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy, announced his retirement this week. You mentioned a couple of women senators seen as more moderate in the Senate Republican caucus. Yesterday, Senator Susan Collins, one of those, gave reporters a glimpse into what she wants to hear from a nominee.
I do get a sense from them on whether or not they respect precedent. And from my perspective, Roe v. Wade is an important precedent, and it is settled law.
What do you make of the role of Susan Collins and Senator Murkowski from Alaska as potential swing votes on this, or at least their influence on who gets nominated?
And again, I think more than anything, it's they're trying to use a little bit of leverage that they have to try to at least get the Trump administration to recognize that there is some quicksand that they could step into and really derail the whole process. So, you know, there is this odd kind of courtesy that goes on after a nomination, and they walk the nominee basically to every senator's office. And, you know, most senators do it as a formality. Some really dig in and plumb the ideas of these nominees. And I think what Susan Collins is saying is that might be too late for you. You better be seeking our consent about some of your nominees ahead of time, because we may not be so willing to acquiesce to whatever choice you make. So it's big signaling from Collins, and I think from others who have publicly spoken about this issue, just to make sure that the Trump administration knows it can be easier or harder depending upon how you want to treat this. If you want to bull rush us, that might not go so well.
Majority Leader Senator Mitch McConnell says he wants to have this thing in the bag by November, or by the fall, I should say, which means it would be done before the November elections. Now, the Supreme Court, I was looking at some numbers, at least in some polls, about 1 in 5 voters in the presidential election in 2016 said, yeah, Supreme Court justice, top issue for me. 50-some percent were Republicans, only 40-some Democrats. This was a voting issue for Republicans when they pulled the lever or punched the ballot or filled in the thing for Donald Trump. Is that something people are watching, you think, for this fall's election?
I think so. I mean, the issue of Supreme Court justices and some of these what we consider fundamental or important civil rights has always been, or I would say at least from the 1980s on, has always been a really important issue for voters. A lot of these voters are often single-issue voters regarding things like religious liberties or abortion and privacy rights. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be consequential for the president, and this also might not play well for Republicans in the Senate, and they're hoping to hold on to their majority. And, yes, they may squeak through and be able to get another Supreme Court justice who was nominated by a Republican. But it may do significant damage to them if it's a wildly unpopular choice. So there is a balancing act here. I don't know how concerned President Trump is about that and whether or not he's willing to throw the senators under the bus or not. So we're going to have to kind of wait and see what kind of temperament this nominee will have and whether or not it's going to really affect public opinion in a big way.
Do you see this affecting elections at the state level? If Roe versus Wade is at play, that's a big if, but if people are looking at that, could it be an arguing point for Democrats and Republicans, hey, what happens at the state level matters now. An anti-abortion law, for example, could pass and be approved by the U.S. Supreme Court, so that that affects these state elections.
I think it can, because it's about protecting, you know, state rights or protecting women in states through state law rather than relying on this umbrella of constitutional protection. So certainly I think that this is going to accrue some benefits to Democrats who are running. It's just another arrow in their quiver to make the case to voters that Democrats are going to do a better job protecting your rights. Now, it's not going to resonate well all over the country, but I think among certain constituencies, it's something that you can really pound Republicans with if you're a Democrat.
Talking to Charlie Jacobs from St. Norbert College in De Pere about Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy's retirement and the effort to replace him. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about how the confirmation process works? Do you have thoughts? What are you looking for in a nominee? Whichever side of big debates you're on, what do you want to see here? What are your hopes, your fears? How do you think it's going to affect elections in November? How it'll affect your vote? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with political scientist Charlie Jacobs from St. Norbert College, looking at the confirmation battle over Justice Anthony Kennedy's seat on the U.S. Supreme Court. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Is the Supreme Court a voting issue for you? With this retirement announcement this week, what was your reaction? What are you hoping comes out of this? What are you fearing comes out of this? Call in at 800-642-1234. Do you think it's good to have more or less identifiably liberal or conservative justices on the court with, you know, some variations there? Or would you like to see swing voters, people in the middle, moderates. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Michael is with us in Green Bay. Michael, hi.
Hi, thank you. I had agreed with the guest from St. Norbert in saying that I don't think that right now there will be a justice put forward or a candidate put forward that'll be so radical that even with the new votes of 51 to confirm it. But I think there's a large chance that they are going to put forward someone who is going to try and swing with their ideological agenda of the right and of a more conservative way. But I don't think that justices themselves should be judged based on their political leanings, but based on their character and their history as a judge.
Michael, thanks a lot for the call. Charlie, and I think there's a lot of talk about just weighing the judicial background of the nominee for a Supreme Court or lower court for that matter. But do the partisan politics still enter into it?
Oh, it certainly does. Most of the studies that we've done in political science recognize pretty clearly that the ideological predilections of a nominee are going to wind up being reflected in their behavior on the bench. So if you're a conservative Republican, you are more than likely going to vote in that direction. And that often leads you in your interpretation of the law. So it is very important. It's not an exclusive predictor. Look, they were calling Justice David Souter the stealth candidate because, well, we didn't know anything about him, but he looks like a rock-ribbed conservative, and he wound up being quite liberal on the bench. So you never know, but, you know, aides in the White House right now are digging deep to determine whether or not they are going to be reliable conservative votes, whether or not they're good judges or bad judges or have good character or bad character. They are looking squarely at how they're going to vote politically and ideologically.
Thanks for that call. We'll go next to Peter in Madison. Peter, hi.
Hey, how are you guys today?
Good. What'd you want to bring up?
So kind of going off of what was just spoke about. So, you know, my underlying problem with the whole Supreme Court conversations that's going forward is that we label these justices either a Republican or a Democrat or conservative or liberal, when in reality, you know, they're sworn onto the bench to interpret the law with no bias and you know, judge each case as they are without thinking about their own personal views. So I always think it's kind of funny when, you know, we think about judicial restraint and judicial activism. And you know, what I'd like to see is a truly unbiased, you know, there isn't one way or the other. They read the law and interpret it case by case and do the right thing by the people.
Peter, thanks a lot for that call. It is an interesting question, Charlie. We've got the U.S. Supreme Court with this nomination process, and we end up with judges we feel like are pretty partisan. We elect our judges in Wisconsin, and we have identifiably conservative or liberal or Republican-backed or Democrat-backed judges. Is there such a thing as a way to find nonpartisan judges?
It's quite difficult. And you know, Peter raises an interesting point and one that's very important. And I'll sort of quote John Roberts, who during his confirmation hearings, trying to sound very objective, said, "As a judge, I just call balls and strikes." Well, I don't know if there are any baseball fans out there like I am, but even with a little box up, when you're watching ball games on TV, you disagree with the way balls and strikes are getting called, and batters disagree with it. So we try to make these processes objective, but there's always going to be subjectivity. The manager, the batter, the catcher, the umpire are going to disagree about what's a ball and a strike. And we do the same thing when we talk about the law. The manner by which we decide to interpret it textually or using history or using sort of a living idea of the Constitution are going to produce different outcomes in cases. And so we often conflate those with the ideas of liberal and conservative, but the outcomes are generally either perceived as liberal or conservative, and that's what weighs down the process of decision-making.
Peter, thanks for that call. Charlie, I've seen some analysis, including from a UW-Madison professor, Ryan Owens, in the Weekly Standard, saying, and now the closest thing to a swing vote you're going to have, assuming a more conservative Gorsuch-like appointment, is Chief Justice Roberts himself. He might be the most likely to switch sides now that Kennedy is leaving. What do you make of that?
If you look at the data, that's exactly the case. And quite honestly, Roberts is not that much more conservative than Kennedy is right now. We use this measure called Martin Quinn scores, and he's very, very close to what Kennedy looks like. And to sort of reinforce this idea that this matters quite a bit, you know, when you've got four people who are more conservative and four people who are more liberal, the person who is what we call the median justice, the one smack dab in the middle, is the one to whom all arguments are framed in Supreme Court cases. And so Roberts will really, it's like lawyers will be talking to one person on the court because the other votes are likely already taken up. And so Roberts has said repeatedly, and you see it in his work, that he is really concerned about the legitimacy of the court. So if he believes that the public is going to perceive the court as becoming too conservative or starting to implement two political points of view through the law, he may take on that Kennedy-like mantle and side more often than you would expect with liberals, merely because he wants the public to have confidence in what the court is doing as an apolitical institution.
Yeah, when it was Kennedy drawing all the attention, you know, the Roberts vote might not look so important. It might feel like there's a lot of pressure on you if you are viewed as the one overturning a major precedent. Just briefly, do you think that weighs on a justice?
Oh, I think it certainly does. I mean, it weighs on it, and we have to remember, these people also have egos. I mean, they're nine of the most important people, you know, in the legal profession. And so when all the spotlight is on you, I think there's probably trepidation because you're worried about offending a particular constituency. And trust me, Kennedy is disliked by conservatives and liberals alike.
We'll leave it there. Thanks to Charlie Jacobs, political science professor at St. Norbert College in De Pere, with us to talk about the coming political tussle to replace Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy, who announced his retirement earlier this week.